This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. It's most definitely the dog days of August. People are away, although a lot of them were hard to find in July, too. But our intrepid political candidates have been around for the most part, and it finally feels to me anyway that we're beginning to have a few good races locally, the Senate race, of course, and now the 6th District where Republican Richard Tesei is going after incumbent John Tierney. A lot of the focus up until now has basically been on gaffes and non-sequiturs, but a few good issues are emerging. We'll get into all of that and have a go-round on Whitey Bulger's intention to talk next March when his trial begins. We'll be marching down to that, won't we, Wendy? Joined here in the studio by...
Front row.
Yeah, front row on that. I plan to cover it myself. Wendy Murphy is here. She's an attorney and adjunct law professor at New England Law, Boston. Terrence Burke is a public affairs professional from Denterline. And Charlie Chipio, a principal at Chipio Strategies. So this first issue involving Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown, I have to say when it broke a couple days ago, I was doing a little eye crossing, but it's kind of a good one. This is has to do, Charlie, you were probably, he's such a wonk, he was into it from day one.
Yeah.
So this group... Demos, am I saying that right?
Yep.
Demos,
so,
which
yeah.
is...
I think it's Demos.
You do?
I heard it yesterday pronounced
well,
Demos.
Well, Demos would make
like
it...
the Greek restaurant.
Okay. I know.
All right, so let's say, well, either way, Demos or Demos, I'm not really sure. It's a progressive group that was pushing for Massachusetts and other states to comply with the 1993 National Voter Registration Act. So it filed a lawsuit in 2011 and 2012. Basically, this state, anyway, agreed to comply with Demos' demands. So the organization sent out voter registration information to people on EBT cards, welfare recipients. And the leader of this group, Demos, whatever, we're going to have to get that straight.
Maybe I think I'm mixing it up with a Greek restaurant.
I think you are. I think it's Demos. Anyway,
right.
So Amelia Warren Tiagi, she's the chair of the board of trustees for this group, and she is Elizabeth Warren's daughter. So now Scott Brown is pushing back and saying that this is just spending state money on a Democratic issue. And today he's actually asking for the Elizabeth Warren campaign to repay the state for the money. I don't really see it. Terrence, I
think this is one thing where Scott Brown is really reaching out to the right or wing of the people he usually reaches out to. This is definitely always an issue with the more conservative side, and I think he found this, came up, they're using it as sort of a Democratic machine versus Republican candidate who's trying to do the right thing. But when I first saw this bubble up, I thought he's really trying to grab that right-wing base. You know, they say make sure you cultivate your base. He hasn't done that so much recently, and I'm wondering if this is a good way to do it.
Kind of a prejudicial assumption that everybody who's on welfare is a Democrat.
Well, see, that's the other thing I was going to say is that, you know, Scott Brown, we just saw the profile again of him, and we know the story.
Yeah.
But, you know, he came from a modest background. So my question to Scott Brown is, perhaps maybe he could have been on EBT or his family was. Don't you appeal to them too? I mean, why is it immediate fear
assumption
that because people need that assistance that they're not with you? And so it's a stereotype plus the fact that he's throwing red meat to the right wing side of his supporters.
I don't agree with that. Look, it's not so much are poor people likely to vote Democrat. Are you going to vote for the person who's going to continue to give you the money? Whatever you want to call yourself,
right.
It's a purchase. It's a quid pro quo. It's, you know, I think it seems pretty obvious and it is not prejudicial. What I didn't understand is, you know, why Warren's campaign's response was to say, oops, we don't know how this all happened. It's just coincidental, because that is insulting. I think that is what gets them in trouble here. They should just say, it's legal. We did it because we can. You may not like it, but this is politics. Be a grown up. Get over yourself. And, you know, Brown's campaign, I think, should be saying back, well, it may be legal, but it has a stink of unfairness to it, and I hope the voters care about fairness. That's the argument that I think. It's not a lot of money. I don't care if she pays back that money, although I do think it's, you know, it's a question of ethics.
You think she should?
I think, you know, symbolically it may matter to some
people. It's a state obligation, not a campaign obligation.
I know that, but it's perceived as having been engineered for her behalf, for political reason, in part by her daughter. And for that reason, I think it might be symbolic. I don't think it's about money, even though the public may be thinking, as I do, you shouldn't be spending my dollars to promote just one side. I did a little research, by the way, on my own, and I looked up. I said, what is with these lawsuits? How common are they? Are they really just politically motivated? And sure enough, the only other lawsuit filed like this in 2012 was filed in Florida, really important swing state in the presidential campaign, again, targeting welfare
recipients. By Demos? By the way, it is Demos. You were right.
There you go.
Was it filed by Demos or something else?
The DOJ website didn't indicate who filed it, but the point is that it appears so strategic, and I do think that that's a problem for her campaign not to admit it, to say, okay, we did it, it's legal.
Oh, no.
When you
don't
allow research.
I didn't get that memo.
You know, I think, first of all, one of the things that strikes me is Senator Brown calling on the Brown campaign to repay the money, which is telling given that I think at this point both of these campaigns have more money than the state, which is a whole different issue that we should probably look at. I guess I will probably surprise you in that I'm not so sure that this was sort of a you know, something that was in the grand plan of the Warren campaign. I guess what troubles me about it more is the bigger picture, which is it seems to me from my long ago time in law school that the idea was that everybody had to have access to voting. And this is sort of like, to me, this is like Solyndra and Evergreen and the government deciding who they're going to invest in. Why do we have a special law that essentially focuses on people that are on public assistance? What about returning vets? What about a million other special interest groups? You know, we should just be out of this altogether. I guess that's my comment.
We shouldn't be encouraging people to vote. I agree.
I'm serious. That's not what I'm trying to say.
Serious about that.
So a more passive system where you have to go to the post office or something. Yeah. I mean, I think it is unusual that you're helped along in this.
But certain people are helped along.
That's what
and
I mean by that. So I don't get something in the mail, for instance, to say, right? I mean,
right.
I guess to renew.
Well, we all get it at the driver's license.
Because
we don't mail anymore.
But this law that was enacted in 1993 specifically speaks to being informed of your rights in terms of voting with your driver's license.
But we don't get any notice anymore about our driver's license. I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lawsuit brewing right there,
I
think.
There you go.
There's an opportunity for it.
All right, here's what I'm troubled by, and maybe it's, you know, you can't totally control what your family members do. I mean, we've seen that with Jimmy Carter and, you know, his brother. But this is her daughter. And you know what I would have said? I said, take a hiatus from this because it's the appearance of a conflict of interest. So I don't even know if the daughter consulted with her mother before she. This is her job.
But this is anything
that is an appearance. That's all I'm saying.
This is entirely in character. Look, Elizabeth Warren is tone deaf. Elizabeth Warren is more out of touch with the average person in Massachusetts reality than any candidate I've probably ever seen in the 35 years I've lived here.
I haven't met anyone who thinks this wasn't a plan. And you know, you can call it a conspiracy, you can call it strategy. I don't know anyone who believes that this wasn't entirely planned for her benefit. I mean, the lawsuit could have been filed 5 years ago, and it wasn't. It was filed now, this year, and it was rushed along in a particular
state. December 2011.
Well, but it was rushed, you know, to resolve right around now for this purpose. And the settlement that the state agreed to is weird. A lot of states have settled these suits not by requiring these mass mailings, but by requiring, better education on the issues and so forth. So why this case this time?
Well, it wasn't an illegal resolution, though.
No, it wasn't. But I'm saying the way it worked itself out was so overtly politicized and so much planning.
But if she pays the money back, then she will be de facto admitting that it was politically driven, and she cannot do that.
Well, you know, it's a duck. It's got all those factors about quacking and looking like a duck. She may as well suck it up and be a grown-up.
Can't start paying money for that. I can't establish that precedent like that.
It's a good issue. I think it's an interesting. All right. Also, in the Senate race this week, this may speak to what you were talking about, Charlie, Elizabeth Warren saying that Scott Brown should release 20 years of tax returns for his 20 years of public service. She basically had to walk back on that because he's released 6 years of returns and she's only released 4. But, I mean, how does something like that happen? How can somebody put out a statement like that without having looked at how many times did we go around on those stupid tax return things anyway? You should know what everybody has put out.
Was it a statement or was it a verbal gaffe?
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I'm just saying there's a difference between people sitting around a computer saying, how do we word this statement about this?
No, I think it was verbal.
Yeah. So that's what it was. It got away from her and she was in the furor of the Romney.
But to say 20 years?
20 years.
When she had only released four?
Yeah. And she had people, both campaigns had people looking over your shoulder while you were looking at some. Some they could take away, but some they could only look in the campaign office.
But this is the thing. She doesn't know what she's released. She doesn't live in the real world.
It's true.
But it's true. And this is why, even in Massachusetts, even in a presidential election year, once we get to September and October, she actually has to be out there every day talking. She's going to get crushed because this is what we're going
to
see.
It's really interesting to see. I shouldn't tell on my friend Ed Markey, who was on the show the other day, but we were talking afterwards, and we were talking about the Senate race. We were actually talking about global warming and stuff. And he said, the Senate race semester, that'll fall down the usual line, 69-39. I said, you mean... he said, first of all, the presidential race, 69-39 and for Obama. And that's what'll happen in the Senate race. And I said, you mean the opposite? He says, no. I said, no. That's not going to be the case.
He thinks she's going to win
You wonder if, the Democratic Party nationally is a little bit... I mean, Ed Markey lives in Washington. Let's face it. He's not really in step with what's happening here right now. It got me to wondering if maybe there's an overconfidence on the part of the National Democratic Party.
That's often the case where the National Party can get overconfident and not feel the vibe.
Well, look what happened with Martha Coakley.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, too, is that, I was helping a friend run for office out in Central Mass area and before Scott Brown won, and I really felt, when he did win, I felt... I felt closer to, I'm not saying I knew everything, but I just felt closer to what people were saying.
In touch.
And I wasn't just blown away.
I could tell
away.
By the people in the studio right here.
Away. And so you wonder.
Even at GBH, I could tell.
Yeah. But I think that, I hope that, she does have a national group running her campaign, and I just hope that that they are really get some feelers in and feel what's going on so they can assist her in winning.
My sense about the campaign is that that confidence comes from almost the same confidence that when you send out the voter registration to welfare recipients. You expect a certain vote. You expect a lemming-like response. You expect people to line up because it's Massachusetts, and we do have a certain predictability, and we're downright boring. And we are. Yeah. And I do think that Scott Brown changed that. So I'm surprised that Markey said that because it's not like he doesn't know what happened with Scott Brown and Martha Coakley.
He's predicting something that I've said all along, too, that once you get into a voting booth, you tend to go straight down a line. Hate to say this, too, but I will, that there's confusion about splitting tickets. Because you can't do it in a primary, but you can do it in a general, and people don't remember. And they go in, even though the ticket says, and they start going down the line, and they just go, pop, 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 pop.
I think you're onto something there, because Markey is a Washington guy, and if you look at it, I think John Walsh was incredible in 2010, the way he learned the lesson, from the Scott Brown election, and he was amazing, in the 2010 election. He's a state guy. I'm not sure the national people get that.
I think, too, this sounds unusual, but I think that there could be some interesting connection between Barack Obama and Scott Brown in terms of in people's minds, not going through policy and stuff, but going with their gut about Mitt Romney being sort of an unusual person and very detached emotionally in some way, and if you look at Scott Brown's life and Barack Obama's life, they both face challenges, and they face challenges today. They're trying to solve some problems. I wonder when people work on a psychological level and on a gut level if they're pair Barack Obama and Scott Brown together in a weird way.
I see that. I totally get that. I think as much as Mitt Romney comes across as handsome and presidential looking and really smart, and you can't even fault the guy. He raised a wonderful family. Yeah. I love his wife. I would vote for her before him just because she just seems so grounded. And he has this weirdness factor that comes from maybe too much perfection that I know no one who can identify with him. And it isn't just the religious thing. I don't know anyone who's flawless, and he comes across as flawless. That said, there's something different enough about him that if you're looking for the guy who isn't the same old, he is that person. He's the different enough type of candidate where you can say they're all kind of in the mud together, and then there's this man who really rises up in his weirdness. I mean that. I think he has that. I think I mean that in a sincere way, that there's something attractive about him because he sounds like so good to be almost too good to be true.
But
he doesn't have that up from the bootstraps, you know, I can identify with you. And
he'll never have that, though.
I think people see Barack Obama and Scott Brown playing basketball. I mean, I think they actually did play basketball. I mean, people see them as somewhat normal. If you know what I'm getting at, then Mitt Romney wouldn't be on a court shooting hoops and
yeah, but you don't
want to
vote for the guy shooting hoops.
Well,
no, but
what I'm saying is that some people operate that way. Like, I need a strong hand on the tiller and someone to solve all this. And other people reacting with their gut could see it in
who they identify with.
Fernstrom had a I think Eric Fernstrom is funny and sassy and kind of witty anyway. We've all known him back from the days when he was a writer for the Boston Herald. Now, of course, he's a big-time advisor for the Romney campaign. So this is over this advertisement that the Romney campaign has been running, claiming that some poor soul died of cancer because Bain Capital took over the company and laid him off and ended his health insurance. And it was the guy's wife was diagnosed with cancer.
Right, exactly.
Then they couldn't afford her treatment. So Eric Fernstrom said today, "I don't think a world champion limbo dancer could get any lower than the Obama campaign right now." I actually agree with him. I mean, what the heck?
Well, outrageous.
You know, blaming anything. I mean, people will reach for anything to blame on cancer. I mean, anything. You know, from a plastic cup to
radon.
Radon.
I still have that radon movie upstairs in my. I was thinking about you because we were moving. Yeah. You know, radon kills more. That's what it claims. More people than any other cancer. Name me one person who died of radon cancer. One person. And the EPA says more people than any other cancer in the world. Radon. It's like, what? Anyway, I still have that upstairs. So.
But,
where were we here?
But what we were talking about was that ad, which, you know, and I'll make a distinction, that is not run by the Obama campaign.
It's a super PAC.
But what's interesting,
Priorities USA
did they
Action.
Actually run that on television yet? What was fascinating was, and people were actually saying this about it as they were commenting on it. So I saw it on Morning Joe. I saw it on a bunch of other cable talk shows. So they're running the ad for free, basically.
Yep.
Everyone pokes at it and talks about it, and we're talking about it. And then the PAC can say, well, we never ran this ad.
Yeah.
We never ran it.
But Obama could have said it's despicable, too.
And that's what the other thing they got into the soup was that they kept asking the Obama people, like Stephanie Cutter and others, well, what about this ad? We don't know the details, when in fact they sat on a conference call and had that guy on the conference call.
Just say it's despicable and move on.
I know. They won't do it, though. Yeah. So what they've done is they've thrown this piece into the mix. It's done a lot of damage. And then they say, it's like standing up in court and saying something. The judge says, strike that. But the jury's
will
heard it.
This jury,
of course we will. So it's out there. It's 10 million points past the AMPAD ads that Kennedy ran in 94. And because this time there's actually saying someone died as a result of this.
But what I want to know is, why don't they fear the backlash? Something they measure they do this? Whoever's in charge of thinking about the impact, whether it's the PAC or the pollsters.
Well, they don't care. Those super PACs do not care.
But somebody's got to be wondering, what's the likely impact going to be on votes, right? How do they know that this won't cause such a backlash against Obama?
Because the history is that there usually isn't a huge backlash.
Yeah.
I think of this kind of story as producing, in me, an angry vote against him.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Talking to Wendy Murphy, Charlie Chipiu, and Terrence Burke. The other thing that was kind of interesting out of that one of the Romney spokespeople, Andrea Soule, told Fox News in relationship to this, well, if these people had been in Massachusetts under Governor Romney's health care plan, they would have had health care.
He's embracing it.
That was something that Romney went, no, that's not happening. I mean, they didn't want to, running a million miles away from his own health care plan that would have protected
what health care plan?
That was a very bizarre moment.
Yeah.
But like the spokesperson who said on MSNBC after the health care decision, it's not a tax. Or, you know, there have been schizophrenic responses about Massachusetts health care and the Romney campaign that don't seem to blow up into anything. So leaving it alone maybe makes sense. But I think that's a nice ironic point to make. Yeah. Well, had she only been here, okay, done
by
with that
story. By the Romney campaign.
Yeah, I know it's weird. But
I was like, oh, yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, but they won't make it for long.
No.
So, Charlie, you're a big tax cutter kind of guy. What about Mitt Romney's proposal to cut 20% across the board income tax, closing loopholes, saying that deductions will pay for it. Is this realistic?
No. I'm actually, you know, but to be honest with you, I'm really not a big tax cutter guy. I mean, I got my start in this stuff working for Paul Tsongas, and I'm definitely much more a budget mm-hmm. balancer than I am a tax cutter. I mean, no, I just don't think the numbers add up. You know, I think that, you know, the basic issue, the bigger issue that we face as a nation is what kind of services do we want and how much do we want to pay? Because if we want a continuation of the status quo, we need to pay a lot more. And if we want to pay less, like a lot of people want to pay, there needs to be, you know, we can't have one out of every three Americans on some sort of federal assistance like we do right now. And that is the longer term, bigger choice that I think we need to make.
So there's no chance that he's right, that closing all these loopholes would make up the difference.
I wouldn't say no chance. I think everybody around this table has, since their earliest recollection of a campaign, heard about cutting waste, fraud, and abuse and how waste, fraud, and abuse was going to pay for everything. And I think we're all still waiting for that to happen.
And it just so happens that it benefits the wealthy, the wealthiest, that tax cut, so it helps out his base.
But Romney has a reputation for having done things in Massachusetts around the idea of efficiency that didn't seem to create more problems for the poor, and yet he did save a ton of money. And, you know, from a business perspective, that may be exactly what the public wants. They're not exactly sure what they're going to cut or add or do, but Romney is far more capable.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I was there, and he was better at that than any office holder I've seen.
Without putting people into homeless
shelters. Early Romney.
Yes,
early
Romney. But I still don't see how the numbers add up.
Right. Yeah, there's a couple of polls out this week, too, that were pretty interesting, basically saying in all of these swing states that President Obama still has the edge. What is it that Romney needs to do in states like Ohio and Wisconsin?
Needs to be less stiff. I don't know how he does it, because it's not him.
You know, people look to him like, that's the guy that put me out of work, that closed the factory, that sent all the jobs to China and India. And when they see him, they just think that's the person that does that. Barack Obama is at least trying. He's, you know. Also, I think Obama has some stripes of a winner on him, too. You know, Bin Laden, the health care.
That's going to have to come
whether
up again.
Whether you agree with it or not, even on the ACA, on the Affordable Care Act, he won. And so people like seeing a winner in some ways. And so
they're seeing he
won. So they're looking at how people, at him as a survivor, someone trying to fight for them. And I think that's what appeals to
him. I'm not sure anybody outside of Massachusetts and Rhode Island and maybe in California sees it that way.
No, you know? No, I'm not. As I said, they don't agree with the law, perhaps, but some people do respond to someone who is trying something and winning, and they may not like it, but they'll say, you know, he's got his act together, maybe, or he's doing something right.
He gambled well.
That's what I mean.
He did refer to it happily the other day as Obamacare, when I think before the decision he was a little bit reluctant.
Oh, he called it that?
Yeah.
Himself?
Yes, he did. And
he said,
I'm calling it Obamacare because I do care.
I refuse to call it that.
Well, I've never heard him call it that.
I mean, it's a pejorative ginned up by the Republicans.
Yeah, but now Democrats are embracing it.
Yeah, they clearly are. I think for Romney, what would appeal to me, and I'm a fierce independent, and I may not vote at all, frankly, but I swear I may not. I may not. I may end up in another country.
I'll take your vote.
What I think Romney could do to appeal to the swing states, especially in states where there's so much welfare that it really is a quid pro quo problem, that Romney can't just mail them checks, right? So I think when he talks about building jobs and growing jobs, he has to tie that to the notion that dependency is offensive to them and undignified for them. And that when he talks about jobs, he's talking about not only getting them jobs and building the economy generally, but giving them the life and the dignity that comes with being a working American, because, you know, that pride in working just isn't there. And so many people sit home and take a check because they are lazy, and we're breeding laziness. And Romney has to say, why is that bad for America to breed laziness and dependency, and connect that to his plan for jobs? And I think that's appealing even to people on welfare.
I agree with that. But I think also the other issue here, the problem that both campaigns have, is that we are fiscally so deep into the mud. We are in such a mess that no matter what we do to get out of it, there's going to be immense amounts of pain that are going to be involved. And it's just, I don't know how you avoid that, and that's not a particularly good campaign issue.
All right, before we move on to our favorite story of the week, which is, of course, Whitey Bulger, I just want to touch on the 6th District Congressional race. John Tierney, his problems basically continue to mount. The Sunlight Foundation, Common Cause, and Center for Responsive Politics have all officially now requested an investigation of the congressman through the House Ethics Committee. They're saying essentially that this money that his wife received, about $1,000 a month for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, whatever it was, from her brother, which is running this offshore gambling operation. He's now serving a jail term for that. That she didn't declare it as income. It amounted to like $236,000 or something like that. But she took it as a gift. And these people are saying, you know, talk about your duck analogy, walks like it's income. I mean, she was operating the books for her brother and her two brothers, I guess. So she was taking a salary. How is that not income? And I mean, I don't even know if it'll make a difference if there's an ethics investigation into John Tierney. This thing has gotten really ugly too, Charlie, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
Now the Tierney campaign is slashing back at Richard Tesei. Some claiming that he was involved in some kind of a fraudulent sale of the family home or something. I don't know exactly the details there, but
Look, I mean, this to me, this one is the great. This will be the great test. The great 2012 test of how strong Tammany Hall is here in Massachusetts today, because you have all the stuff that Tierney. All the sort of bad things he's, you know, apparently done. On top of that, you have the fact that no congressman has accomplished less in the last 16 years than John Tierney. And
Is he been in 16 years?
I think
terms?
It's 16 years. Wow. But, you know, you don't have a crazy guy like Hudak who ran against him last time.
Right.
And so the question will be, is Tammany Hall so strong that even so, you know, he might win. And you know, you're seeing this kind of strike back stuff, which is, you know, I've been getting these emails. It's kind of pathetic.
I get them every day.
Nobody's been charged with anything. You know,
it's confusing when you read that website. I live in the district where Tesei.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. And
you're in the
6th. Yeah. Well, I mean, he was the state senator
when
I was in Melrose.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And he was just, everyone liked him. He was just not a, Democrats liked him. Everyone.
He's a moderate really liked, guy.
Yeah, very moderate. I think people knew of his lifestyle and everything like that. And everyone was very live and let live. He always showed up at 4th of July parades. I think but I think that builds for him. Mm-hmm. And that Tierney's got to really, dial up, to counter what you said, Charlie, and show that he's brought something to the
district. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I think Tammany Hall's going to flounder on this one.
I think so too, but I
could be wrong. I've been wrong before. Right,
no,
Terrence?
No.
All right.
No,
what do you say? Always confident.
Yeah.
Seldom right, but always confident. Whatever that line is. Yeah, that was a good one.
Sometimes wrong, never in, I don't know.
Yeah, never in doubt. Yeah.
Yes, right.
All right.
Yeah.
Talking to Terrence Burke, Wendy Murphy, and Charlie Chippy. Wendy, on to our favorite Whitey Bulger this week through his attorney, J.W. Carney, says he will testify in March. He will go on the stand. What has he got to lose?
Right.
He can admit everything. He's going to say which FBI agent, or I should say more properly, Department of Justice executive, authorized him, gave him a license to kill, gave him immunity for essentially everything, as long as he cooperated with them to take down La Cosa Nostra, which he did. They took down the Italian mafia back then in the 70s and 80s through the informant status of Stephen the Rifleman Flemmy and Whitey Bulger. And he says, I did it. Mission accomplished. I was given immunity.
Right. Right. That was my prize. I don't think he's going to take the stand. I love Jake Carney, but he is theatrical and strategic, and he's really smart, and he's a good lawyer. And there's a very good chance he made this announcement only because he was under the gun to reveal the corroborating witnesses or the third parties who would actually confirm this claim. There may have been an understanding that there was apparently a lot of immunity going on, but I don't think there is another witness, and this was Jay's only choice. That's my feeling. But is he going to take the stand?
I think so.
I bet you.
He wants to talk. He's
no
dying to talk.
Way. No way.
All right, I'll
way.
Take that bet.
Malpractice.
I'll bet you $10,000. I mean,
I think it would be per se malpractice. even though the guy's got nothing to lose because he's going to get life, life, or life, it would be per se malpractice.
I would say that, you know, speaking from the credibility I've developed by finishing in the top 97% of my law school class, that I would faint if he took the stand.
He can choose
great
to.
TV, though.
No
it'll
TV.
It'll be great TV.
It's federal court.
Right. Oh, it'll
That's
be great.
Right.
Good.
We need a
good
waiver.
Drawings.
We need to get a waiver on
great
this.
Shot
can drawings. You help us do that? Get a
I'll
waiver
try.
For the
I'll
TV
fight
stations.
For you. I think it'd be a great story to watch.
We need
no,
to
he can choose to testify. I should be clear. His lawyer can't force him one way or the other. But I'm saying if Jay recommends it and pushes
didn't,
it.
Didn't, what's his name? City Councilor Turner take the stand?
Yeah, you could choose to, even if it's bad for you, if you really want to. But I'm saying I don't think Jay would ethically. Really,
you said it. He made the announcement.
For other reasons. Believe me, for other reasons.
We need really good narration from those days if it happens. Someone that lays it all out exactly what he said.
Wendy, we're counting on you.
Hi, I'm talking to Terrence Burke from Denterline Public Affairs, Charlie Chipio from Chipio Strategies, and Wendy Murphy, an attorney and adjunct law professor at New England Law, Boston. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. When we return, thumbs up, thumbs down on the people, places, and issues in the news this week. I'm Emily Rooney.
Spanish and English merge into Spanglish.
Ahora desayuné un oatmeal con brown sugar and raisins.
Spanglish is now officially recognized by Spain's Royal Spanish Academy, but not without controversy.
The future of the Spanish language is not in Spain, is not in Mexico, but in the United States.
A bridge and a divide between languages. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 here on 89.7 WGBH.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Bridge Bank, building long-term relationships with entrepreneurs and businesses throughout the country and with East Coast offices in Boston and in Reston, Virginia. You can find them on the web at bridgebank.com. And It's Your Move, Inc. Oftentimes, adult children are not available to help parents with later life moves. It's Your Move specializes in these challenging emotional life transitions. More info available at itsyourmoveinc.com.
You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. It is time for our ever-popular Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down segment on the people, places, and issues in the news this week. I'm joined here in the studio by Wendy Murphy, an attorney and adjunct law professor at New England Law, Boston, Charlie Chipio from Chipio Strategies, and Terrence Burke from Denterline Public Affairs. Are you ready?
Ready.
Stoke your engines, whatever the saying
Stoke
is.
Your thumbs.
All right.
On your mark.
On your marks. All right, whatever. Here we go. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Will you blow a pile of cash over this coming tax-free weekend? Terrence.
No, thumbs down.
depends how you define pile. I am definitely buying a table, a kitchen table.
That's good.
So thumb halfway up?
Yeah.
It's not a pile.
Doesn't matter, pile. All right, cat, anything. Are you going to buy something this weekend because it's tax-free weekend?
I'm going to try. I'm going to try buying a kitchen table.
Terrence?
No, I'm not. No.
You're not buying anything?
No.
Thumbs down, the refrigerator we needed was cheaper on sale than it was a couple weeks ago than it will be without the tax this week.
Thumbs down, I'm really disappointed. I just bought a new car. And then I said, wait a second, how come that doesn't qualify?
Over $2,500.
I guess I was a little dense on that one. I didn't realize it was an under 20. That's the other thing.
Buy some tires then or
thumbs
something.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Should it be? Should the $2,500 limit be taxed? You know, should it go up?
Well, maybe it would inspired you, to buy the car then.
But I would have waited then until today.
Yeah, I don't know. Sure,
increase it.
I'm all about tax-free. Yeah. Thumbs way up.
Yeah.
Tax cutter guy, Charlie.
You know, make it a big, big number. And then, I wonder what would happen if you did make it, you know,
houses.
Like car status.
Houses.
Well,
boats.
Well, you don't pay a tax on the house.
I don't know. Big ticket items.
There's no state. I don't think so. Not in the house. All right. Here we go. I'm looking around this room thinking, I don't know, because I got a lot of sports things in here. And Terrence, what about you, Wendy? You've been watching the Olympics. Here we go.
A little bit. Olympics.
You have? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, thumbs up, thumbs down on Usain Bolt declaring himself a living legend, having won, he's only 25 years old, having won the 100 and 200 meter relay individuals.
I think it's part of his character, thumbs up.
I would give him a thumbs up, strangely enough, because I prefer honest arrogance to false modesty any day.
Nice. Well, thumbs down. I mean, I think he is a living legend, but, you know, didn't his parents tell him you're not supposed to say that? You
know. I don't know. I give him a thumbs up. It reminds me of, you know, Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
You know, just like, just
it's the package.
How could you?
Well, I'm not sure he does it with the humor and the glint
in his
eye.
But that's why my son
Ali
wants
did.
To see him. He's sort of larger than life. We need those. Like, he's like a superhero in a way.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Should the Olympics be bothering to test for marijuana, Wendy? We should say this judo person.
Yes, I know. So I would say thumbs way down because it doesn't seem to me it enhances anyone's performance and it may well allow them to, you know, relax. And I don't know that that's unfair.
Yeah, thumbs down.
That sounds good. What Wendy said, so thumbs down.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, you can test for all the other stuff that you want to, but I don't see. But, I mean, I guess, you know, they can't eliminate one drug and not the other.
I don't know.
Sure they can.
Yeah.
It's legal in some countries and, you know, it's an international thing.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Will you be watching the closing ceremonies, Terrence?
Part of it, I guess.
When is it?
That's what I was going to say.
It depends what it is.
Maybe on the road. I missed the opening. It's too bad. Then you saw clips of
the opening was good. I don't know about the closing. Yeah. That gets a little tedious. Is it Sunday?
I think so. Yeah, they end Sunday. It is sad when they douse the torch. And
it
everything.
Is.
It's very emotional.
It's been great. I've been loving it.
Yep.
Wendy?
Well, thumbs down on watching. I think if I were in London, I would physically go, but I don't get television does nothing for me on that score. I watched a little bit of the opening. No, and I haven't watched a lot of it. I mean, I'm one of these gymnastics, soccer.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, you got
part-time
your
lover.
Yeah, that's okay. Thumbs up, thumbs down, Charlie. Boston? Host an Olympics? All right, you can.
Oh, no, I was just because I just.
I have to get you on that.
No, but living in Needham, I have to watch
because
we all
go.
Have Ally Mania.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Should Boston go for the Olympics sometime in the next 2 decades?
No, I'm a big believer that those things always, always end up costing way more than the benefits that they bring.
We couldn't handle it.
We should try. It's about placemaking.
Oh, I'm going to try to keep the top of my head on.
Well, Mitt Romney may need a job.
One more sports one. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Will Bobby Valentine be back next season? Terrence.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Wendy.
I don't care about sports, but I read the controversy, so I would say thumbs down because the general manager reportedly would not answer the question, will he be here for the long term? And that sounded like a trial balloon indicating he's gone.
I say no.
There's
thumbs
a better
down.
Chance that I'll be in Mars next year than Bobby Valentine will be in the Red Sox dugout.
All right. Thumbs up, thumbs down on that new Greenway on the mural. I mean, the new mural on the Greenway that has the kid with the pajamas wrapped around his head that some people think looks like a terrorist.
I say thumbs up. I was walking with someone. They said, can you believe there are food trucks and murals and a Greenway all in Boston or all over the place? Incredible.
I think thumbs down. You have to be sensitive to what it reminds people of. If it sort of was reminiscent of something offensive to people based on race, you know, would we say, oh, come on, it's just a mural? I think you have to think about how people react. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't sensitive to put it there, I think.
My son's at a camp at the aquarium this week. We're down there all the time. My kids love it. None of them got anything remotely close to what it's actually supposed to be. So I'm thumbs up.
All right, I'll give it a thumbs. All right, we have one final thumbs up, thumbs down. I'm going to go to Terrence Burke first on this, thinking I know the answer. Thumbs up, thumbs down on using propane grills to grill outside as opposed to charcoal with wood. And, of course, there were 2 propane fires this week. Thumbs up, thumbs down, Terrence.
I love the charcoal grill. But I do have a gas grill.
You do?
I have
so
children, Emily. Making a chimney cook for an hour before you dump it.
That chimney takes 5 minutes.
I'm actually transitioning to a charcoal grill soon. So now
so
that the kids are older.
Gas has no taste, Wendy. Keep that in mind.
Listen, we only have propane. I can't imagine ever buying charcoal.
Come to my house.
I'm fine with the tiny risk of an
Emily's
occasional explosion.
I would never use anything but hardwood. I grew up in an Italian family where it was all about the food, and we're willing to sacrifice.
We peel the hickory right off our trees. All right. I see Callie Crossley back here in Studio 3.
Hey, Emily, what comes to mind when you think of a person pacing back and forth, smoking a cigarette, staring at a waste can full of crumpled up paper?
Dear John Letters Gone Bad?
That could be it. Well, those are the tropes that filmmakers have been using for years to depict writer's block. Sound familiar?
Yep.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, that's what we're looking at the movies, about writers who can't write. The new film, Ruby Sparks, is the latest film to take on the dilemma of a writer who can't meet that deadline.
Okay, my thanks to Terrence Burke, Wendy Murphy, and Charlie Chipio. I'm Emily Rooney.
I'm Callie Crossley, and this is Boston Public Radio.
See you later.